Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn.
Welcome. I'm Dr. Richard Tooley, and with me today is Dr. Rose Gamblin, and we are talking about leadership and our children, teaching our children to be leaders. This is a pretty important subject because leadership isn't something that necessarily means they're going to be the president of the United States, but it could.
Yeah, leadership is one of those things where if we can teach our child to be a leader, that means that they'll be fortified from following the wrong leaders.
Yes, it is an interesting phenomenon. They will actually be willing to march to their own drum. And I remember my son when he was in high school, and they would be doing things that the students did not think was too cool to begin with, and he'd be the only one participating in the activity. He would just stand up and participate. Well, pretty soon people began to stand up and participate with him. And finally, the whole student body was standing up and participating with him. Well, if I were to have asked him whether he was a leader or not, he would probably tell me he wasn't. He was just doing what he wanted to do. But in fact, he did lead.
Yeah, every person is impacting the people around them. You know, we each have a circle of influence. And I see young people who are very reticent. They're so worried about what their peers are going to think about them. And one of my goals is to get them to feel comfortable enough that, like, even during the act of worshiping God, you know, they won't want to say prayer out loud or they won't want to sing. Well, part of the learning how to be a leader is to not worry about that kind of stuff. You know, you're worshiping God. You should be focusing on God, not what someone's going to think about you. But how to get them to that point?
Yeah, let's start by defining some of the models of leaders. You know, you had the Earl Koenig concept, the Earl King, or the big man,
yes,
leadership
big man
model. That's one of the theories. And of course, that doesn't play out too much in today's society or in today's world. I mean, you don't have just the big king person who everybody follows, you know, but you have charismatic leaders, and then you have collaborative leaders. So there's all kinds of different leadership styles or different leadership
concepts. Hierarchical in nature, the military view of the, you know, the small, the corporal up to the general.
Yeah. So you end up with a structured leader where people are leader by virtue of the position that they find themselves in. But for young people, typically that's not going to be the leadership style unless they're in a gang, which you really don't want them to be in.
Right. So our whole goal is to help that child become a leader and prevent some of the pitfalls of following the wrong leader.
Yes. So one of the key elements that seems to play in here is the idea, and we've talked about it briefly before, is this idea of locus of control. You know, a child who is fearful of what other people are thinking about them is someone whose locus of control, that'd be one of the first evidence that the locus of control was very external, because they're afraid of the impact of other people on them. And this also goes towards bullying, you know, cyberbullying and some of the types of bullying that goes on now. It's no longer the big bully on campus coming to beat the tar out of you. It's now, let me see if I can undermine you and kill your character and you know, do things that are violent in verbal ways.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest protection that we have is when a child has the capacity to know who they are.
Yes, and I just want to bring out the fact that a parent really they need to guard that child. If they go into a public school situation, often those that have natural leadership ability will be singled out by the gang. And so the child has two choices. They can either succumb to the pressure of the gang and be like them and fit in, or they can continue marching to their own drum and being persecuted, or leave. It's like those are the only three choices, because if you tell a trusted adult and the trusted adult gets on the other student's case about it, then that child even stands to be under more pressure. And so a parent has to make some hard decisions sometimes. They sometimes have to take that child out of that hostile environment. I mean, you wouldn't continue working in an environment like that where you were berated all the time because you didn't, you know, dress a certain way, or your skin wasn't a certain color, or, you know, you wouldn't put up with it. But we often make our children put up with it when they have a God-given talent to lead, and satanic agencies working through unconsecrated hearts start attacking it at a very young age.
Yeah, it is a complicated question, especially for parents who have the children in public schools, because usually you go to school in the district that your house is in.
Mm-hmm.
So to move from one school to the next is not that easy. Private schools is a little bit easier. If things aren't working out in one private school, you move to the next. The downside is that you got to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is some value that way. Now, when you talk about parents protecting their children, you're not talking about a helicopter parent, you know, the kind that just kind of hover.
Well, I don't criticize a helicopter parent if they have the ability to hover. But my experience has been that the hovering parent often is part of the problem, because when they're not hovering over the child to protect them from some outside force, they're hovering over the child and criticizing that child every move they make. And that's where it becomes very deleterious to the child, because you're in this, really, it's a hostile environment now in your own home. So I always look at that hovering parent, you know, is there balance there? Do they really have something to be worried about? Or are they just one of those kinds of people that are looking for a problem?
Also, there might be another aspect of it here, and it's something that I had read recently, dealing with locus of control children. One research paper that I read demonstrated that parents who were kind of like helicopter parents, etc., were more helicopter parents with children who had an external locus of control than parents were who were with children who had an internal locus of control. So, for instance, they found that a child with an internal locus of control, the parents tended to be breezy and easy to talk to, and, oh, go do it and see if you can make it work. Where a child with an external locus of control, the parent tended to be getting frustrated. And the way they had done this study is they brought the child into a room and gave them increasingly difficult tasks to do, and then the final task was an easy one that they were going to succeed at. So they started off with easy tasks and built them up to tasks that were very, very difficult to do. At the same time, at the other end of the table, another person engaged the parent in conversation and in their own set of tasks. So the parent was doing their own work at the other end of the table, filling out forms and being kept busy, while down at the other end, this child is working on these increasingly difficult tasks. And the parents who had external locus of control children pretty soon lost focus in what they were supposed to be doing, and began to focus on what the child was supposed to be doing, and making statements like, how come you can't get that? You're doing it wrong. To the point where some of them said, here, let me do it. Where parents who were with internal locus of control children tended to say, well, you know, it's okay, you'll get it. just keep working on it, you'll get it, while they kept working on their thing. So the response from the parents were different. And I think that probably has some relationship to how children are taught to have internal locus of control by their parents from the beginning.
Yeah, that would be an interesting study. I know with the students that you worked with, the ones that had a pretty strong internal locus of control, in saying it in a layman's language, that be that they control themselves more than others?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, because I think if we just keep talking about locus of control, people are going to go, what? But locus of control is essentially a way of saying, when I take responsibility for my actions and I take responsibility for life, that's an internal locus of control. An external locus of control is life happens to me. Mm-hmm. And you hear the people saying, why in the world did this have to happen to me? How come all this bad stuff? You know, if they wouldn't have done that, I would have been more successful over here. The way of making sure that we divest ourselves of the responsibility of it then is an external locus of control. People who do not divest but invest themselves with the responsibility of their life, mm-hmm. they have an internal locus of control. So
it is related to self-regulation to some degree. Students who, or children who have a strong internal locus of control, self-regulate probably better than those who don't.
Yeah, they certainly can be taught to self-regulate better. And I think there are factors that play into it that, you know, such as are they an abstract random? Yeah, abstract randoms have a hard time self-regulating. Or are they a concrete?
Yeah. Well, we'll unpackage it a little bit more when we come back. We have to take a break right here.
Okay.
You've been listening to Homeschool Companion. You know, we'd love to hear from you. Be sure and like us on Facebook at Homeschool Companion or call us at 301-824-3162.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Richard Tooley, and with me is Dr. Rose Gamblin, and we've been talking about leadership and how to develop leadership in your children. So we were talking about this locus of control and how it affects the child and the parent and parent-child relationship, but also how a child who has a good internal locus of control, who is developing leadership skills, also will be able to weather the storm that they go through in adolescence, mm-hmm. and in those formative years. And some of the things that have been coming out is how we talk to our children in the learning process.
Yes.
You know, when you start talking to your child, for instance, in the learning process. So here we have a child who's doing a math equation. And as a parent, you're sitting there with this child doing this homework. You can see the answer, and it's frustrating the daylights out of you. But how should you talk to your child at that point when the child is saying, I can't get it?
I always tell students, don't say you can't get it, because you put a block there where your brain listens to you, and then then you won't get it. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, say something more like, I'm trying to understand. The words I'm trying to understand then gives your brain permission to keep trying to understand. But if you just say, I can't get it, I can't get it. And man, there's been students that actually ended up getting in trouble because they would just keep saying, I can't get it, I can't get it, I can't get it. You know, and I'm going, you will never get it if you say you can't get it. But if you say, I'm trying to understand, then eventually you will get it. Because there's been a lot of students before you, especially when it comes to long division. I can't get it. I can't get it.
It's too hard.
It's too hard. It's so much work. I think, though, that, you know, yeah, those are cute little strategies of how to help your child talk to themselves and be open to learning. But when it comes to leadership, in every class, it's really important to give the child opportunity to lead in the class. You know, not just get up and lead as we think of leading, but to have the opportunity to teach a problem that you know they know. Because sometimes teaching what you know, it's a scaffold. It builds on the next thing that you didn't know, but there was something in that scaffold that you did know, that you were able to hang on while you were stretching and learning the other concept.
Now, you bring up the idea of a child being able to do presentations and stuff and be able to do some of these teaching. And I know that you've experienced this, so you can describe to us some of the processes that goes on. You have the child in the classroom who's just quaking in their boots at the thought of having to even say a word that somebody else might hear. And for that person to actually have to get up and do a presentation, how do you handle that one? Do you just say, well, we're never going to make you do that? Or are you able to actually bring those children out?
Well, I do. I stretch them as far as they can. For example, doing your book report orally. You know, you've written it, but there's a nice time at the end of each week where you can present it orally. So you can read what you wrote. And I will have some of my shyer students, you know, hold the paper up so no one can see their face and then read what they wrote. I've had students that, you know, had to stand by me and kind of hide, you know, in in the corners of my clothes or my just hiding kind of behind me. But they still did it. And they felt so proud of themselves, and everyone applauded them because they understood, you know, we set the stage at the beginning. Everybody has different gifts, and some people can easily get up in front of other people, and other people can't. And we've just seen some real miracles with some of these very shy students that have recited at the Christmas program in front of everybody, scared so much that they had been throwing up the night before, but they did it. You know, it wasn't till later that I found out how stressful it was. And I'm thinking, you know, am I doing the right thing by stretching them so? And I still don't really have the answer to that, because I do believe God creates us all differently. Some people are natural leaders, and others in the sense of how we think of getting up in front of people. These people who can't get up in front of people are still leading. They're leading in other ways.
Yeah. Well, what you've done, too, and I've seen it in some of the students that I've been able to observe, there was one person who came in who was absolutely terrified about ever saying their memory verse up in front of anyone. And by the end of the time, they were not only getting up and saying their memory verse, but they were also getting up and doing presentations using PowerPoint and in front of the whole class.
Yeah, and doing a very good job. Volunteering to be first.
Yes. So it can happen. And there's a principle here that I think is rather important. And that is, you don't accept two things. First of all, you don't accept no as an answer. You know, as a teacher, you're not to, or a parent, you don't accept, I can't do it, or it's too hard as an answer. That's not a good answer. Now, some things are too hard. You got to be rational about it, but don't accept it, especially if it's age level, grade level appropriate. Don't accept it. We pushed students well past the boundaries of wherever students at their age group should go, and they did succeed.
Yes.
We also did one other thing there, and I saw this in your classroom, which is very, very, very valuable. We didn't talk about bullying. Rather, we talked about respecting each other and their space, who they were. We talked about respect.
Yes.
And there's a difference between saying to someone, I don't think you should bully, and saying to them, you need to respect.
Mm-hmm.
So what brought you to the point where you got the idea of teaching people to respect others as opposed to teaching the don't bully?
Well, it's very simple. I thought of that lesson about when you're telling students not to think of a monkey with red eyes, and when you tell someone do not think about a monkey with red eyes, they almost always immediately think about a monkey with red eyes.
That's true. I bet you everybody out there right now is thinking about a monkey with red eyes.
And I began to apply that to everything I did. And to this day, everything I do, if I can frame it in a positive way so that I'm not telling people to think of monkeys with red eyes. Another example is someone told me that when those who study, those who are trained to detect counterfeit money, what they do is they have them study the genuine article. They don't have them look at counterfeit money. They have them study that genuine piece of money so much that when they go and do look at a counterfeit bill, they recognize it immediately because they've been so focused on the genuine article. Well, I mean, in a big analogy, yeah, I'd like to be so focused on God that I don't have to, you know, have this whole list of things that I'm not supposed to do and the consequences that go with it. I know people in the, a few years ago, teachers were supposed to put all of the correct behaviors that they wanted to have happen in the classroom. You know, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't. And then if you do this, this and this will happen. And if you do this, this and this will happen. I really am trying to get away from that and do it more in a broad stroke. And so that's what prompted me to focus more on the positive. Respect God, respect others, and respect yourself. Respect God, respect others, and respect yourself. Everything else filters through that. And there's a lot of natural consequences that come if you don't do it. But let's just focus on what we're going to do.
It's interesting because the consequence was a culture of a respect.
Mm-hmm.
And a culture of acceptance of the other people for wherever they were.
Yes, and it gave us a great safe place to practice and become good leaders.
Yes. Now, there's one other point before we close this that I want to talk about, and we can do this really quickly. When we talk about people who have failed, so someone gets a test back and they failed. Now, there's two ways of responding to that failure. One way is to say, you know, that test was so hard. Actually, probably three ways. That test was so hard, they shouldn't have given it to you. Parent can respond that way. The other one can be like, you are so stupid. Why do you fail that test anyway? And another way is, you know, if you had applied yourself a certain way and looked at these things a little more carefully, you could have been more successful. And I think one of the things we can talk about this, and maybe we'll have to do it in another show, is the idea that being able to let a child fail is not the worst thing in the world for that child.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to point out how that child could have done things differently and been successful, as opposed to just brushing it off or killing the child over it,
yes,
verbally.
Yes. There's so many ways that we can affirm our children and help them be confident and encourage their leadership. But we run out of time. And we have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.